Morning, this is Dr. Daria Brzezinski. We're here again this morning with a wonderful guest, Ruth Becker. Ruth is formerly with the Pennsylvania Resource Council. She has spent 25 years in community education with water management, recycling, beautification, healthy homes, radon and lead. She's lectured in communities and schools, and we're glad to have her this morning. Hello, Ruth, how are you?
Good morning, Daria. How are you?
I'm fine. Now, we're going to be talking about environmental education this morning, and we've had several guests, specifically engineers and architects, talking about environmental ed, and we're going to get a different perspective this morning from you. Why should we bother teaching about the environment, environmental education?
Well, we live on this planet. If we don't understand what our personal impact is on the planet, we're not going to have a planet to live on.
That's a perfect, that's exactly correct. Why should we focus on environmental education? Why should it be the focus?
Environmental education encompasses everything. It encompasses the air we breathe, the water we drink, the land we use. And it also encompasses the environment in the sense of the psychological and the sociological.
Right.
In short, we are the environment, and the environment forms us.
That's true. One of the concerns that I have is that we spend a great deal of time talking a lot in education, teaching courses in environmental education, and yet it doesn't seem to integrate when a child goes home. How can we better, environmental education is not just a subject in school, it's a way of life. How can we better educate children and their parents and all of us adults in environmental education? What would you suggest?
The easiest thing to do is to live what you teach. To teach a child in school that we have to conserve paper and then use a huge sheet of paper and only use one side to write a composition is a waste of paper. Then when the child goes home, if he does it in school, if it becomes a way of doing things, he or she can transmit that experience to the people at home. What I'm really concerned about now and what really alarms me is that the concern about environmental protection, which was at its peak 10 years ago, has become sort of, oh yes, it's there, and of course we are concerned about the environment. We recycle. And for many families, the fact that they recycle, that's their big contribution to environmental protection and environmental preservation.
What kinds of things can they do at home besides recycling?
The first thing that we have to do, if you're going to recycle, you have to understand that what you recycle has to go somewhere. It has to have a market. If it doesn't have a market, then it becomes trash. So it means buying recycled. That's number one. It means looking for labels in the store. It means getting the recycled products directory from PRC or from DEP.
Wait a minute. Before you start, most people don't know what those initials stand for, so would you tell people what they are?
Okay. PRC is the Pennsylvania Resources Council, and DEP is the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection. Together, they've published an excellent book on listing some 700 products with recycled content. That's one thing that you can do.
Now, I am very, very, as you know, well aware of recycling and purchasing recycled products because I owned an environmental store myself. And what I find is in most stores, they don't have recycled products. For example, the major chain stores or the major grocery stores don't carry recycled toilet paper, recycled paper towels, or the biodegradable soaps. So where can we go to purchase these things?
Bottom line is you go to where you shop. Stores are in business to make money. And in order to make money, they have to provide the kind of products you want. You go to your store manager and you say, I want paper products that are made with recycled content. Am I allowed to mention a product name?
Go ahead.
Well, for example, Markel is a very good product. Markel is made totally from recycled material. if a store doesn't carry a brand like Marcal, you ask for it.
That's correct.
I mean, if you look at your detergent and it's not made in a it's not held in a container that's made of recycled content, you call up. Most products and most manufacturers have 800 numbers. Call up and make your voice heard. We talk about being an environmental shopper, and there are five R's to being a environmental shopper: reduce, reuse, recycle, reject, and react. And it's a very neat booklet. You can send to the Pennsylvania Resources Council for it. But it tells you, you want something done, you make your voice heard. Shopping is not unlike anything else, but with shopping, you actually have more power than most families understand. You look in your wallet, and if you've got dollar bills in there, that's your power.
Now, can you give us a phone number for the PRC so that people can call in case they would like to?
Yes, the number at PRC is 1-800-GO-TO-PRC.
That's 1-800-GOTOPRC.
That's right.
Okay. Now, when we talk about recycled products, let's start with the five R's. Reduce. What does that mean?
What does that mean? It means that when you go shopping, you go to the store with a shopping list. You just don't go running up and down the aisles and picking what strikes your fancy. About one-third of what is purchased in a normal shopping trip is really done on impulse buying. And half of what we buy as impulse buyers, we never use. It gets discarded unopened. It looks as if we really have to have it because it's in a place that's attractive. It has an attractive display, so we buy it. And then when we look at it, we really wonder why we needed it.
All right. What does reuse mean?
Reuse means, for example, you buy a container of margarine in a tub. It comes in a plastic tub. And after I finish using my margarine, I reuse the tub.
All right. So
I haven't bought a plastic container, I think, in the last 10 years. All of the containers I have here in the house are containers that I'm reusing.
What about products like families who buy juices for their children's lunch boxes?
Well, I'll tell you an interesting story. When my grandson first went to nursery school, he was sent home with a slip which said he had to use one of those little boxes with a straw.
Right.
Because it was safer. So my daughter went to her local store, and she found a little plastic container with a straw. And she fills it up. She filled it up for him with juice every morning. It was just as safe as the ones that were throwaway. Or in some cases, they are recycled. But the bottom line is she was reusing the same container over and over again. She boiled it in hot water to make sure it was sterile. And he reused it.
Now, the majority of parents who, and I know many of them, who make lunches for their children have difficulty and tend to buy products like the puddings and the Jell-Os and the manufactured products that are instantly put into lunch
small
boxes.
Containers.
Yes.
Well, aside from the fact, I mean, I'll go with you and say you're in a big hurry and you need to get that. Though you have six kids and you've got six lunches and you've got to get them ready really fast. And so you use all of these containers that are filled with Jell-O or pudding or this. Aside from the fact that it costs you a lot of money and you're creating waste, my other main concern is how many chemicals are you feeding your kids?
Well, let's talk about that. What kinds of chemicals are you talking about?
I'm talking about chemicals that are preservatives. I'm talking about chemicals that are coloring agents. I mean, you can't put all these little things, you can't put meat in a plastic little container and send it off to school without having something in there to preserve it. I mean, you know, the old rule is if you look at the contents and the contents have more than three or four things in them, you've got too much in that container.
Well, also, my rule of thumb was if I can't pronounce it, I won't buy it.
That's probably a good rule of thumb, although there are some good things that are hard to pronounce. And the other thing that really has me concerned today is what are we doing with all this biogenetically engineered these products that we're using.
What does that do?
What does that do? We don't know what that does. That's the whole thing that concerns me. In Europe, they are very concerned. In Europe, they're saying we don't want bioengineered foods because we don't know what the results are of the, you know, the bioengineering.
Yes.
The genetic engineering.
Yes. And we're all the way down to healthy foods at this point because I know soybeans are being genetically engineered. Isn't that correct?
That's right. Soybeans are being genetically engineered, but however, more and more of the foods that are served to vegetarians are now carrying a sign which says, this is not a genetically engineered product.
I haven't seen those in my health food store.
Well, I just, in fact, someone just sent me a product this morning, and it says certified organic contents. No genetic engineering materials are in this product.
So certified organic means
right.
that it's not, oh, so certified organic means that it's not genetically engineered. That,
right, it says, it also says on there, certified organic, no genetically engineered content.
Got it, okay. Now, what is the problem with, and I've spoken about this before, and let me take a little bit of a break here. You're listening to Children Come First. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski. We're here every Tuesday from 10 to 11 a.m. on your radio dial. You may be listening to WAAT 750 AM or WFBS in Berwick, whom we welcome. And we're talking this morning with Ruth Becker. She was 25 years with the Pennsylvania Resource Council, and we're talking about all areas of environmental education. Now, Ruth, let's get back to the, I'm a what's called a vegan, and I'm an organic vegan on top of it, which means that I only eat organic foods that have no pesticides and no, hopefully, no genetic engineering. But the majority of the population of the world thinks nothing of eating, you know, quick fix McDonald's burgers and, you know, foods that they don't. I have a son who's a chef, and he said, you know, you wouldn't believe what happens in a kitchen, not necessarily just the kinds of foods that are prepared, but as well as the, you know, the chemicals they put on them to preserve them. And
mm-hmm.
We don't think about those things in our culture. What kinds of effects do these things have on us?
Well, we already know the effect. We've had an increase in colon cancer. I mean, and we know that that's, you know, that that's related. I can't say cause because you're not allowed to say anything causes anything. But we certainly know that an increased consumption of meat is related to colon cancer. You can't stop. I mean, I am appalled at the number of young people who are starting to smoke again.
I noticed.
I mean, I went through the generation of withdrawal. But, you know, at least when I started, I didn't know how terrible it was for your lungs. But one of the things we think about, it's going to happen to someone else. It's not going to happen to us. I know a lot of people who've gotten colon cancer. I know a lot of people who have had the increase in male brain tumors is up by about 10%. Now, I went to a forum on the brain tumor, and I heard the doctor say, well, the reason that it's up is because the diagnosis is better. Well, I can't believe that 10% is all in diagnosis. I have to believe that there's a cause and effect there.
Also, the meat relates to, I mean, there's so many things going on in my head right now. My questions are just going 1,000 miles an hour here.
Well, let's talk about genetically engineered soy and corn. You know where the bulk of the soy and the corn that's produced in this country goes. It goes to the meat. It goes to the cows that we eat. And so these cows, which already are given
injected
healthy doses of antibiotics, so that when we have to get antibiotics, we have to go for new ones because we've developed
an immunity.
We've developed immunity to because we've eaten so much meat. And I don't want to attack meat. I mean, I love meat. I think it's delicious. It's great. But I know that it's not good for me.
Well, it also, aren't cattle the most devastating to the soil?
They use up half the water that we use. And, you know, I know it's a business. A long time ago when I talked about this, I had a farmer call me up and say, why are you picking on me? You're trying to put me out of business.
Well, also the cattle production itself, the process of getting cattle from the herd to the supermarket is very environmentally unsafe with regard to the kinds of plastics that are used, with regard to the spray on the grass and how it runs down into the, and all the chemicals they eat runs
and
down
run into the water.
And into the level of the drinking water underneath the surface. So there are many things, not only the fats that are involved in the product production of cows, but also the chemicals that are used, first of all, by injecting the cattle in order to make them faster, bigger, faster, and better. They are given hormones, but as well as, you know, I had a rule of thumb a long time ago, and that was that you are what you eat. And so I thought, you know, cattle are, why are we eating and drinking milk and eating cows? And are we acting like cows in the process?
I mean, I hear your vegan philosophy coming out. But I mean, you can, you know, you can look to, you can look to real facts. Look at Dean Ornish out in California, who has a totally meat-free diet, who has been able to take people with clogged arteries who've had heart attacks and reverse the clogging of the arteries by cleaning up their diet and actually making them what they eat. What you said before, they are what they eat, and now they're not, you know, they're much healthier people.
Well, I swim an hour every day and run rings around people half my age, so I'm very convinced that, and people tell me I don't even look my age, so I know what you're saying. Let's go back to, we talked about two issues, reduce and reuse. Recycle is the obvious one.
Mm-hmm.
What kinds of products can be recycled? You know, I noticed on the bottom of styrofoam cups, there's a number system, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. What are those?
All plastics in Pennsylvania and in many other states have the number system.
What is
the problem is
what does the number system mean?
For recycling plastic exists only for 1 and 2.
Okay, so only number 1 and number 2 are recycled.
That's correct. Only 1 and 2 are recycled where plastic recycling takes place. I really don't know any place where polystyrene, which is number 6 recycling, is taking place. Number 7 is mixed plastic, and if that can be recycled, it can be reused someplace like in the interior of a car. Now, the automobile manufacturers have been very good about using some of that mixed plastic.
Well, I noticed that many playgrounds now have the tires. How how safe is that as far as the chemical composition of a tire?
To the best of our knowledge, the chemical composition is safe. I mean, what you're talking about is are you talking about the plastic equipment, or are you talking about the tire floor?
The tire floor.
Tire floor, as far as we know, is safe. I mean, there's nothing in a tire that would be, I mean, unless you burn it. If you burn it, that's another story.
Right, it's toxic.
But if it remains inert and it's nice and bouncy and it's very safe for kids to use.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the kinds of chemicals that are found in household products. Can you give us some names of products that are detrimental and how we can counteract those?
Okay, let's just talk about, you're talking about household hazardous cleaners. And bottom line is, if it's got a skull and crossbones on it, if it says warning, if it says danger, if it says, you know, rush this person to the hospital, these are things that you should try to do without. You'd be surprised how you can clean your house without using chemicals. I haven't used chemicals around here in a long, long time, and my house is pretty clean.
What do you use instead?
What do I use?
What would you use? Baking soda.
I use a little ammonia, discriminatingly. When I clean my toilet bowls, I put baking soda in my toilet bowls, which keeps them from smelling. I use a little bit of cleanser to scrub them with, and And for doing windows, there's nothing like a piece of newspaper and some alcohol. That does a great job. If you find that you've brought a tube of toothpaste and you hate it, makes terrific polish for your silverware.
All right. How about cleaning the floor?
Cleaning the floor, I use a little bit of soap and water, and I clean the floor. I find that the important thing about any floor, if you want it to stay clean, you clean it up when it spills.
That's true. How about whitening your clothes?
Whitening my clothes, I have to tell you that I use washing soda.
Washing soda?
Mm-hmm.
What is washing soda?
Washing soda, I don't know what it is chemically. I could run down and get the box and tell you. Washing soda is something my mother used, and you can find it with your detergents. It makes your clothes smell sweet, and it makes them white.
All right, let's take a little bit of a jump here. How about as I sit here drinking a green milkshake?
Daria, I'm sorry, but go ahead. The connection was really getting bad.
Okay.
It's sort of rough.
Well, what happened was that seems the heat system went on, so that's why you're having a difficult time hearing me. Now, my question is, what happens to people's bodies who take in all kinds of chemicals? And I'm talking about not just the additives in foods, but I mean, we're the pill-popping society of America, and I mean, of the world, as well as getting injections for this or that. What kinds of effects do those chemicals have on our body, if any?
Of course they have an effect on your body. I'm not a scientist by profession, and I'm sure if you had two scientists talking to us, they could tell you that all of these artificial things that you take in have a price to pay. There is not a pharmaceutical. If you look at the physician's desk reference called the PDR, there is not a single pill that you can put into your mouth that doesn't have a side effect. I mean, this new drug that they're using for diabetes is a perfect example. For some people, it's a great control for diabetes, but I heard on a TV program last night that 80 people are dead because of liver failure. Now they're putting the pill out with a warning which says your liver needs to be checked when you take this pill. How you respond to something depends on your body. I mean, you know yourself, there are people who never smoked who die from lung cancer.
Right.
But chances are, if you smoke, your chances are far greater of dying from lung cancer.
All right. Now, let's go back to something in the schools. You know a lot about radon and lead.
Mm-hmm.
And I just read a recent report coming out of Silicon Valley. You can get it on the web, and I'm sorry I don't know the website at the moment. It eludes me for the moment. I have it here. But it is a website that talks about all the chemical toxins in a computer. And one of them is the fact that each computer contains 4 to 6 pounds of lead.
Mm-hmm.
As well as emitting other kinds of toxic chemicals. Have you looked into this?
Yes, we've looked into this, and EPA requires that business computers be disposed of properly, and there are agencies to call for disposal of computers. They just did a study on what happens to computers and people. Most families have had 2 or 3 computers, and they don't throw them out. They either give them away or they let them sit up in the attic. They just don't know what to do with them. And computer disposal is a problem, and it touches on another concern of mine. When a manufacturer is a contributor to pollution, and I don't mean overt pollution, I mean long-range waste pollution, should that manufacturer be responsible for disposing of that product? In other words, should the stores that sell computers be required to take them back when you're finished with them?
Exactly. I'm one of those people who has 2 computers sitting in my house who doesn't know what to do with them.
Exactly right. You don't know what to do with them. Now, we at PRC, they collected computers a couple of Earth Days in a row. And in one Earth Day, I think we brought in about 500 computers. Now, what we did with them then is we gave them to some of the social service agencies who took the parts that were good and try to revamp them and make those computers available to people in lower income areas who are trying to learn how to use a computer. In other words, if you learn how to use it, you could take it home.
Terrific.
Which is good, but the thing is we are producing so many computers and using so many computers, I don't know how fast you can fix up the ones that we have that we're not using.
And the point is that Silicon Valley now has become one of the highest areas in the world for toxins because of the number of computers that are laying about in Silicon Valley and have been discarded. I don't know what the answers to these questions are, but...
The answer is definitely there has to be responsibility. In France, they've just passed a law that if you're going to produce something with a NiCad battery, then you have to pay a tax on it, and that's and you have to collect it. The people who produce the things that use the batteries are putting up sort of way stations to collect the batteries.
And that's a good thing.
And I think we're going to have to recognize that here. I mean, I understand that we're in business to make money, but there is a moral responsibility that goes with making money. And that means that when you produce a product like a computer, which has contents which are harmful, I mean, let's not talk about the adults. Let's discuss the adults as foregone conclusions. Let's talk about the kids. I mean, what right do we have to expose our children to things that we know nothing about, to things like genetic engineering, to things like lead and radon and carbon monoxide, without knowing what the impact is? We owe it to those kids to give them an environment they can grow and thrive in.
Now, I have a question. Do the computers emit chemicals while we are using them, toxic gases?
I can't tell you. I don't know. I have friends who refuse to use a microwave who insist that it's emitting rays. I use a microwave. I figure I'll gamble on this. I don't use it that much. I try not to stand in front of it. But, I mean, we don't know. Look at what happened with asbestos. We used asbestos freely. When my husband was in dental school, he did his own dental work, his crowns, his inlays, and he worked on a table covered with asbestos. When my youngest son was small, he did wrought iron work, and his father did him a favor and covered the table with asbestos so he could use his little torches.
Mm.
I mean, we didn't know any better.
You're listening to Children Come First. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski. We're here every Tuesday from 10 to 11 a.m., and this is the conclusion of our first half hour. We'll be back again for the second half hour with our guest, Ruth Becker, who has been 25 years in community education with the Pennsylvania Resource Council, and talking about environmental education and everything affiliated with the environment and how we can improve. As Ruth said, everything about us and everything we do is about the environment. So please join us again for our second half hour. If you'd like any further information about our program, you can call us at 877-PRO-KIDS. That's 877-PROKIDS. Or you can email us at ProKids, PROKIDS, at RLC.net. That's PROKIDS at RLC.net. If you'd like to contact the Pennsylvania Resource Council, the phone number is 1-800-GO-TO-PRC. That's GOTOPRC. 1-800-GO-TO-PRC. GOTOPRC. And please join us for our second half hour when we will be talking about environmental issues and the environment, especially with regard to our children.